This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 14th of December, 2021. Let's start off the program with a brief highlight of today's upcoming webinar from our head of commodity strategy, Ole Hansen. He will be out today at 1 o'clock CET looking at the commodity market and everything that's going on there. And noting in the title, as you can see on slide two, rounding off the best year, or the strongest year since 2000. You can sign up for that webinar. It's a live session where you can ask questions and have those answered by Ole at webinars.saxo. Just type webinars.saxo in your browser. It'll take you to the correct URL. Okay, let's get to the market action. Yesterday, a weak session in the U.S., attribution, we could look around for narratives. It's the hawkish Fed that's scaring everybody, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a bit of random noise there. I think one thing to highlight technically is that we have divergent momentum. If you look on slide three at the S&P 500, and we have all kinds of lack of market breadth, high concentration. We've talked about that industry in recent podcasts. But what I mean by momentum divergence is this. We've posted close to the new highs for the cycle, and we actually did close at a nominal new all-time high the day before yesterday, and that the MACD is quite a bit lower. Of course, this always happens when you have a big steep sell-off and then a big retracement back to the highs. Anything specifically in yesterday's session that was notable to you, Peter?
Well, we had the NASDAQ 100 looking to push higher. And the same goes for S&P 500, and then everything was looking quite good, and then we just turned on a plate, and we actually had at least in the NASDAQ 100 the lowest close in four trading sessions. And if you look at slide three and the different theme baskets, you could see that they had some of the usual suspects, cannabis stocks, bubble stocks, e-commerce pulling lower. But even also interestingly, mega caps. We talked about mega caps yesterday, and I wrote a piece on it. We had Apple, just flirting with the $3 trillion market value. And it looked like that it was supposed to get that market value. But then the market turned around and mega caps actually lost almost 3%. So the strongest performers were also losing out. And crypto and blockchain stocks were down 5%. I'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in the crypto industry later in the podcast. But otherwise, look at the cybersecurity, very strong performance, up 1%. I think it's in many ways of being viewed as a safe haven. But otherwise, I think the equity market is very much just in anticipation mode of the FOMC. We need to figure out where the Fed is going. What are they thinking about the overall economy? As we talked about in our semi-heated debate before we went on the podcast, John.
Semi-heated.
because as you pointed out, what the hell, sorry, my French, what is the U.S. 10-year yield doing at these levels when you have a U.S. economy that is totally overheating? I mean, in terms of the services sector, et cetera, there's so many, and economists are talking about the base effects, the fiscal drags next year. There, now we have an Omicron case in China. What will that do to supply chains? It's just the parameters and the variables that can change are just overwhelming. To be honest, I think it is a Fed. It's an FOMC meeting that will reflect all this noise, all these variables, and I think they have a very hard time figuring out what to do in this current environment and trajectory.
Yeah, I think I don't know how much uncertainty there is around what they're going to say, but where my uncertainty is how the market absorbs the news. And Atsaya is here to discuss the yield curve in the U.S. and some perspective on previous cycles. But I just wanted to pull a slide that I created and updated from a recent webinar I put up on slide four, just indicating all the various events that have led us to where we are right now. The first being when Brainard and Powell made their acceptance speeches, where there was a very clear pivot to inflation. You can see there on slide four, I focused on the Brainard's opening words there, where she just immediately mentions inflation. This was meant to be the hyper dovish Fed member that was all pro MMT and always having an easy Fed to make sure that as much easing is provided as possible, talking about inflation as a primary objective. So you see, first of all, in the reaction on the Eurodollar short-term interest rate futures, which is what I've posted here, the one for December of next year. So as these go lower, or as this chart goes lower, the Fed rate expectations go up. So one of the big moves was that big October CPI print at 6.2%. Of course, we just saw November CPI print at 6.8%, and that got zero reaction. In fact, Eurodollar futures slightly higher. And then we saw Clarida almost tipping off what the Fed was about to do with his comments on a faster taper. That was ahead of the weekend. Then we saw these acceptance speeches. And then, boom, we got an Omicron variant news, a huge spike, a massive deleveraging. The market was very heavily positioned going into that Omicron news. And then Powell sort of confirming and very much making it clear in his testimony before Congress that the Fed has changed its stripes. And yet here we are, essentially unchanged from where we were a couple of weeks ago. And, anticipating what is going to be one of the most major shifts crystallized in the Fed statement tomorrow with new forecasts, et cetera. So I'm really at a loss to understand if the market is underestimating the Fed's intentions here in terms of where it could take it, or that there's so much uncertainty that it's just simply unwilling to price in too many rate hikes down the road. But certainly there's a lot of uncertainty priced in, I'll say it, to the U.S. yield curve, where we're just seeing that long end persistently very, very low. What are your perspectives and what are you looking at as we go into this FOMC meeting, both in terms of what they deliver and in terms of what it means for the yield curve and for U.S. yields?
Well, John, I think that there is the risk at this point that the market is going to go into a surprise at the FOMC meeting. The market is expecting the pace of tapering to accelerate and for it to end by the first quarter of 2022. What the market probably is not expected at the moment is a revision of Fed interest rate hikes projections. And the big point here is that if you go on slide number 5 and you look at the chart that I put on the right, that shows the FOMC dot plot median as of September versus in red the one of June. And while the projections for 2023 and 2022 moved higher, the longer term projections basically stayed stable. And it would be safe to assume that now that inflation has been identified as a problem, also the longer term projections would need to move higher, and therefore that should push up the long part of the yield curve. So basically what I'm saying, John, is that the mega trend for the yield curve throughout all 2022 is going to be a flattening of the yield curve, because the market obviously is going to go towards interest rate hikes. But this week, we might see some sort of steepening, which is quite counterintuitive, because just yesterday we have seen a bull flattening. Yesterday, we have seen 10-year yields dropping 7 basis points. And the yield curve flattening even more. But it's very clear at this point, John, that Omicron still drives the flattening of the yield curve. And as we go towards better news or the end of winter, that should resolve. And those long part of the yield curve should be free to move higher.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting if that is the case, especially in FX. For my space, something like dollar yen, you would expect if by a steepening you see a higher long yields, then this will probably feed into a weaker Japanese yen. And then you have some perspective on...
On the yield curve and interest rate hikes historically, and I'm going to take you to slide number 6. The big question here is the Federal Reserve going to tighten even if the yield curve is going to be this flat, or, well, the spread between 10 years and 2 years is well below 100 basis points. And if you can see in that slide, every time that the Federal Reserve began with an interest rate hiking cycle, the spread between the 10 years and the 2 years was well above 100 basis points, except for one point, which was in 1999, where actually the yield curve was very flat at 28 basis points. But it's very hard to drive a comparison between today and 1999, because at that point, 10-year yields were at 6%. And right now, instead, the 10 years is basically at 1.4%. But I think that the most interesting takeaway from this chart, John, is that when The Federal Reserve engaged in the latest interest rate hiking cycle between 2015 and 2018. It hiked interest rates by 225 basis points. Right now, the market is expecting the Federal Reserve to hike if we look at the dot plot and the longer term projections, well, it is expected to hike only 150 basis points. That's quite conservative, considering that inflation is really high, and in 2015 and 2018, inflation wasn't a problem. So there is a risk that the Federal Reserve is going to be much more aggressive than the market is expecting, and we should see a continuous flattening of the yield curve going forward.
Yeah, I lean towards a more aggressive Fed than expected tomorrow as well. I think this talk of them merely doubling the pace of the asset purchase taper, which makes that brings the end of the tapering process and the end of Fed balance sheet expansion only at the end of March. I think they need to bring, to be sort of credible in their shift, they need to bring that potential for a March rate hike into the range of possibilities. And then I would look in, like you said, in the dot plot, I would look for a lot of dispersion. I think it'd be best for the Fed to encourage uncertainty about how high they could go. That's a way to sort of bring credibility without committing to a certain policy, a course of policy action, just to have quite a range of views to suggest that, you know, the outcomes are certainly going to depend on how badly inflation continues to spike next year. In terms of the market anticipation around the U.S. dollar, around this FOMC meeting, I've got a little bit of perspective here. I think the market action is so uncertain, it's not worth looking at charts at the moment. But looking at how high anticipation is, you can see on slide 7, I put in a little Bloomberg chart showing the 1 week, implied volatility of options for Aussie versus the dollar and euro versus the dollar. And while the euro dollar looks quite elevated relative to the rest of 2021, it's actually the highest it has been. If you look at the Aussie dollar, you can see, and you would think that what the Fed is about to do is going to bring tremendous volatility in assets and risk assets in particular, you would think that the Aussie dollar implied volatility would be even higher. And it's only slightly elevated relative to the year. And those are very quiet levels that should be added for the, you know, what has been for most of the year so far. I think the euro dollar in part is on the uncertainty around the ECB, which also is a very key meeting this week on Thursday. So keep that in mind. But, there's some anticipation, but it's not that great and a bit surprising because this is to me a major meeting we're looking at and a major event risk. If you look at the FX board, still a bit surprised to see that Chinese renminbi leading the pack there, as we have this recent very clear indicator that they're not really interested in seeing their currency head any stronger. But let's see how that market shapes up. I know, Peter, in your watch list for stocks to watch, there's quite a bit of news in China overnight, and especially in the property sector where there's been some new cause for concern. So take us through that and through what you're looking at for specific stocks today.
Yeah, so you have the Himao, Chinese real estate developer, Hong Kong based. The stock is down 31% over two sessions and then down a lot this year. They have some pretty large real estate in Beijing, and it's just another one. I think we now have a handful of real estate developers that are looking very shaky in China, and you also have Chinese equities down. You know, Hang Seng futures as we speak are down 1.7%, and mainland shares, the CSI 300 index, is down 0.6%. And so it is this ongoing back and forth in China. You know, they have moved to an easing stance. So and now with the Omicron case in China, going to be super interesting to see against their, you know, zero case policy, what they do and what that means for global supply chains. And staying with China, we have Weibo, which is their Twitter. It was down 9% in Hong Kong. It started its new listing in Hong Kong, so it has always been listed in the US, but like any other Chinese companies, they have started a listing in Hong Kong. It started last week, and it's down already considerably, almost 20% from its initial Hong Kong listing. And Weibo is looking very weak, and they got a small fine by the Chinese regulators. It was related to cyber security, if I remember correctly. And you know, the big move is not because of the actual economic value of the fine. It's simply the message that, you know, the Chinese government is still very much on the ball in terms of reining in these technology companies, and that's why investors are increasingly getting spooked, especially I think foreign investors. And then I think Ocado, I don't want to mention too much. I think Toyota is a very interesting story, because Toyota has for now always been saying, you know, battery driven electric vehicle, it's never going to happen. It's not an economic viable solution for them, at least. Others have disagreed. So they have been, you know, focusing on hybrids. They've been focusing on their hydrogen powered vehicles. But they are announcing today, according to Nikkei, that they will invest $35 billion by 2030 in electrification. 30 new models in terms of their lineup. They're going against Tesla and Volkswagen. They are saying at the same time that they don't know where the future is going to be, but they want to be prepared for any direction in terms of technology. So it's not a wholehearted commitment to battery electric vehicles, but and the $35 billion is such a tiny amount relative to what Tesla and Volkswagen is currently plowing into their efforts. And then we should mention that I think the crypto and blockchain basket, you can find it on our trading platform. You can find the basket there. Those type of companies, I think, will be under pressure today, because we're really hanging in a thin thread here in the crypto land, with Ethereum below 4,000 and Bitcoin just trading below 47,000. So that's it. And then Ocado is bid today, as you can see on the slide 8. The share price has been falling for quite some time, you know, in tandem with rest of the growth stocks, you know, segment in the equity market. Ocado has a little bit of difficulty, if you ask me, you know, showing that it can be extremely profitable with its technology group selling these automatic and robot warehouse solutions to other supermarkets. But today there's a positive news. They have won a patent infringement court case against AutoStore from Norway.
All right. And then on the earnings front, I think you covered most of these stocks we're looking at on slide 9 yesterday. I'm a bit curious about this FedEx story. I remember reading recently an article about how FedEx was struggling relative to UPS, because the unionized workforce at UPS was able to step up in a way, or there were some hiring difficulties at FedEx, if I recall. But anything else you want to highlight?
Yeah, we highlighted Inditex versus Shein, which is this fast-moving fashion group from China the other day. So we have that tomorrow. That's really the key focus point. And then we have Lennar, which is one of the larger U.S. home builders. And the backlog is surging in the U.S. There are a lot of considerable shortages on building materials. So you wouldn't believe that if you saw the share price here on slide 9. I mean, it's going tremendously well for Lennar, but that's at least a key concern. What is their outlook for U.S. housing, and to what extent are these shortages hampering their revenue growth?
Yeah, and actually, it's interesting you mentioned the crypto space. We're also seeing Tesla as, you know, one of those. You've talked about a cluster, potentially a speculative cluster there, linking Tesla to a degree with crypto. And Tesla under pressure below that key $1,000 area. Of course, Elon Musk is selling a lot of his shares, could be providing some pressure there. I think I wonder as well if the in the crypto space, this liquidity you're seeing there, whether the downside price action you're seeing there is a sign of weak dollar liquidity, and they're also one of the reasons why we have a treasury market that looks odd relative to the backdrop of a superheating economy. So in other words, we have this weird bifurcation where the economy needs one policy rate and the global dollar system needs a different set of circumstances and a different policy function to keep its self well oiled, and the dollar liquidity becoming a problem. I'm not sure. There's just some odd divergences out there that we need to track how these develop into year end, which is an interesting period as well for book squaring and for potential liquidity types of risks. Anyway, all right, let's go to the macro calendar for today. Lots of busy stuff on there. You can have a look at that on slide 10. Hungary potentially looking to wind down its QE as it's gotten more credible on the rate front by hiking rates quite aggressively. We have the U.S. November PPI and some overnight data tonight from China. And of course, the big event tomorrow. We have November retail sales. That's also quite interesting tomorrow from the U.S., but especially, of course, the FOMC meeting, which we've talked quite a bit about today. We'll have some further thoughts on that tomorrow and take a look at what's going to happen into that meeting. And then, of course, we'll round up the action subsequently on the next Saxo Market Calls.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.